gifted mathematician, and was expected to do very well. He didn't sit the exam. He graduated without honors, and there's a bit of a mystery about why, whether he disdained to do so because he was already the son of a wealthy banker. He didn't need the position that he could get from good qualifications, or whether something else went wrong, and we don't quite know what. But it's a bit of a mystery as to why he didn't sit the exam and why he graduated without these distinctions. So we leave Babbage's life for a while. We'll come back to it intermittently and look at... what's going on here? Look at the reasons for his engines. Okay, the Genesis episode, the big episode where Babbage had his great epiphany, his great discovery, was the vignette that is very well known of Babbage and Herschel, his great friend John Herschel, sitting in 1821 checking mathematical tables. These are hand-calculated tables, and they're full of errors. And so you've got Herschel and Babbage sitting at this table, and they're checking these manually calculated calculations. And Babbage clasped his hand to his head and said, "I wish to God these calculations had been executed by steam. Vapeur. I wish to God these calculations had been executed by steam." Now, steam there is a metaphor for two things. Firstly, to calculate by machinery. And machinery does not make mistakes. So the infallibility of machinery is captured in the symbol of steam. But this was part of the Industrial Revolution. So the notion of steam and steam engines has the connotation of a method of production. How would you extend industrial production from things to making things to making tables so that you could have mathematical tables wherever you needed them? Now, tables were crucial for almost every area of science and engineering. There were no devices. You could not... there were no devices. You could not find a calculation where and when you needed it at the point of need. You had to have a published volume. And the problem was, how do you distribute tables without errors? How do you not replicate errors? So tables were absolutely critical for the conduct of science, for the conduct of engineering. And people were absolutely dependent for daily commerce, for looking up squares, for looking up multiples, for looking up interest rates. They were absolutely indispensable. So the problem was a question of production. When could you produce tables? When you needed them? And also, how would you know they were reliable? And this is a table from a piece of a table from von Weigel's logarithm 1794, and that's a piece of a page. So what Babbage is trying to do is to eliminate possible errors in tables of this kind. Now, you think, well, okay, if you did this by hand and you got hundreds of people to check them, then you could actually be fairly sure that they were reliable. But if you look at the page from which this came, then that is a single page of von Weigel. And if you look at the volume from which this came, that is the volume. Now, I don't believe you could have any confidence that even if I gave you this book and you spent years verifying, checking whether they are accurate, whether you would have any confidence that you had not made a mistake. Now, there's a problem with proofreading tables, is that there is no inherent sense in the numbers. If you're proofreading text, if a word is misspelled, you can detect it. Although people who do typesetting are trained not to try and read the word, because your mind supplies what it is you expect to see. So typesetters and proofreaders are sometimes read the sentence backwards, so that you actually don't try and find the sense in what you're saying now. But even there is an inherent sense. You could read it and say there is a word that has a spelling mistake. You cannot do that visually by visual detection in this thing. So the way these tables were produced is that mathematicians worked out the formula. They were given to people who did the arithmetical calculation. They then did the calculation repeatedly, usually using methods of differences, and they wrote them down. So firstly, there's the error of calculation. They had to do the calculation. Secondly, they had to write the result down in a column. So there's a possibility of an error in transcribing, in copying over the results. Then a typesetter, a person who sets loose type, has to set each of these digits by hand with loose type, So is there a possibility of error there? And finally, once you've done it, there's the question of verification. How do you know that this is correct? So those were the errors that Babbage was, when he clasped his hand to his hand, he said, I wish to God these calculations had been executed by steam. He was trying to find a mechanical solution for eliminating all sources of error in one stroke. And Peter Ackroyd, a novelist and 19th century historian, said that I wish to God these calculations had been executed by steam is one of the most wonderful sentences of the 19th century, because it's the start of the extension of the industrial metaphor from things to thought, and we'll look at that a bit later. So we have in 1821, Babbage has this idea to calculate by steam. He then spends effectively the rest of his life. So he's now at age 30. He spends most of the rest of his life, the next 50 years, trying to realize this idea of infallible machinery. He sets about designing his difference engine. It's called a difference engine because of the mathematical principle on which it's based, which is the method of finite differences. The beauty of the method is that by using repeated addition, by adding and adding and adding and adding repeatedly, you can eliminate the need for multiplication and division in finding the value of a polynomial. So that's the benefit of the method. So in 1822, he designs a little working model that has not survived. There was a lot of public concern about the need to have accurate tables. Tables were used for navigation. And there were a lot of ships that were wrecked at sea, and there was a lot of loss of life and property at sea as a result of shipwrecks. And in public perception, this is an illustration from the London Evening News. There were a lot of illustrations and also very dramatic, harrowing accounts from witnesses who saw these shipwrecks and wrote these terrifying things that had happened. So there was a strong public perception that tables were needed for navigation. Now, I did some research into that, and I could not find any naval shipwreck where the court-martial of the captain ascribed an error to tables. Most shipwrecks occurred close to the shore in storms, not as a result of big navigations and crashing into islands that because they didn't know where they were. So it was a public perception, but it was used in a rhetorical and for political purposes to convince people that you needed accurate tables because of limitations of. So the public perception was that navigation was an important application. But there is no, it's a bit obscure as to whether, no particular examples were ever given for a ship that went aground because of an error in a navigational table. So there's a nice piece of research to be done there. Please.
Coming back to the book you've shown.
Yes. Oh, what a wonderful question. This is a question I asked about 25 years ago to try and encourage somebody to scan these machines, scan this in and check it. It's a project I've been waiting to do for 30 years. Since then, there's a professor in, I don't know if he's in Germany, possibly Holland, who has got European money and he has taken all the classic tables and scanned them in. What I haven't yet done is contact him to find out whether they've done an error analysis. And now the publicist Dionysius Lardner, he was somebody who was famous for lecturing very effectively to the public in science. He is responsible more than anyone else for our belief that it was errors in tables that was the main motive for Babbage's preoccupation with us. Now it turns out that this was something I was coming to later, but I'll tell you about it now. The vignette of Babbage and Herschel is very charming, and historians have been charmed by this all the time. And the assumption is that that remained the enduring motive for all Babbage's life, was to eliminate errors in tables. When we read, Babbage wrote six papers. Okay, 1821, Babbage has this conception of mechanical calculation. By 1822, he's got a mechanical model, which is operated by a falling weight. And you have now a mathematician, somebody whose life had been mathematics. He published 13 papers by the time he was 30. All his output was mathematical. So if somebody with a mathematical preoccupation contemplating an automatic calculating device for the first time. And I lost the thread of what. I've lost it. We'll come back to it. We will come back to this very story. We'll come back to it. Okay. It's what happens when you get to my very advanced age. Babbage, we will definitely come back to that. So Babbage sets about designing his calculating engine. In 1822, he had the small working model. He then went on and designed a difference engine number one. This is all that survives of difference engine one. It's 1/7 of the whole engine. Now, this is probably the most famous symbol, the most famous icon in the prehistory of computing. And the reason for it is it's the first automatic calculator. That is to say, it is the first machine that embodies mathematical rule in the mechanism. So there's a handle on the top, which you operate the machine on. You do some preliminary calculations in a table, and you enter the numbers on these figure wheel columns. It's a decimal machine. And then you crank the handle. And the results appear on this column over there. Now, the fact that it is automatic cannot be overemphasized, because what you're doing is exerting physical energy and getting results which up to that point in time you could only get by thinking. This is the first time that human intelligence had been transferred to a machine where you do not need to understand how the machine works and you do not need to understand the mathematical principle on which it's based to get useful results. Now, that isn't the case up to this point. Before, the algorithm was in the human mind and you would conduct the calculation on paper, informed by the logical rules that you had mentally. Here, the logical rule is in the machine, the method of differences, which is repeated addition. And you don't need to understand that technique or principle in order to operate that machine and get useful results. So it's automatic in that sense. So it's the beginning of automatic computation. It is the beginning also of the significance of the fact that you could get results which up to that point you couldn't get except by thinking was not lost on Babbage or his contemporaries. I've just remembered what I was talking about before. Harry Wilmot Buxton, a junior colleague of Babbage, wrote, "The marvelous pulp and fiber of the brain had been replaced by brass and iron. He, Babbage, had taught wheelwork to think, or at least to do the office of thought." So he's saying, Babbage had taught machines to think, or to do the office of thought. So already they were aware that what a machine does when it calculates is not what a human brain does when it calculates, but the outcome is the same. He wasn't saying a mind is mechanical. What he's saying is that, now, this is particularly interesting in relation to Turing, because what Turing does is he looks at a human being doing a calculation and all he sees is something physical. He's making marks on paper. And what Turing does, of course, as we know, his universal Turing machine replaces, he talks about mechanical process. Now, mechanical process in the Turing-Neumann sense is unthinking. Mechanical in the sense of unthinking. That a machine can do that calculation and does not presuppose, does not require the higher levels of sophisticated consciousness in order to perform a calculation. So the idea of mechanical process is both literal here, it is a machine which has cogs and wheels, but it is also the idea of mechanical is that it is unthinking, that the human does not need to think to produce the results. So it's a hugely significant step to actually produce an automatic machine of any kind. What I was talking about, sorry, yes.
But what you say, mechanical is equivalent to algorithmic.
Mechanical is equivalent to algorithmic. Yes and no. There are other connotations of algorithm that are richer than purely mechanical process, but essentially yes. Essentially yes. There is a procedure which is stepwise that is unchangeable and deterministic. Yes. What I was saying before was the idea of errors, that the idea of errors in Lardner. When we read the six papers that Babbage wrote, so Babbage in 1820 produced this first demonstration model which did not survive. But you have a mathematician now contemplating for the first time what the implications of an automatic machine were. And in those six papers he wrote between June and December 1822, after he'd experimenting with this machine, he wrote six papers. And it's very interesting in these earliest speculations as to what the role of errors were in his motivations. And it turns out they are not very prominent. Errors emerge as part of the story, as part of the rhetoric, when they tried to find a utilitarian justification for the machines in order to get funding, in order to win support. So the point at which errors feature as this prominent reason, a motivation, is actually political. Errors are there, but they're alongside the mathematical potential. Babbage saw these machines as a new technology for mathematics. And errors appeared alongside it, and we'll look at that more carefully present. Now, how did this happen? Lardner made his living by lecturing publicly, and he was looking for material for his big public lectures. And he heard about the engines, and he went to see Babbage, and Babbage explained the mathematical implications of the engines. And the hosts for Lardner's lecture said, this is too difficult for the public. The mathematics is too difficult for the public. So Lardner writes to Babbage and says, we've got to find a way of selling this idea, of making it dramatic. What about errors? Tell me about the errors. So this arose because of a need for Lardner to publicize it. So he eliminated the difficulty of the mathematics and presented what we call a rescue narrative. The problem was navigational errors, because ships were going aground. This was an insoluble problem. Britain was losing material and lives. The solution was Babbage's engines, because that's the only way we could guarantee infallible tables. And so the whole story, the narrative of the primacy, the priority of errors in tables, arose from Lardner as a piece of publicity and a piece of rhetoric. And that has misled people, me included, for historians since that time. So that was the story, that little aside, about where errors actually fit compared to the narrative we tell about the errors. So each cycle of the engine produces the next value in the table. So you cycle the machine using the handle, and the next value appears on the table. And so that's how it produces each next value of the table. So the idea was that this would eliminate all errors. How does it do that? The machine itself is infallible, so the calculations are correct. There is no transcription error, because the full machine, which I'll show you a drawing of, incorporates a printer, which is integral to the machine. And it's not just printing. Printing doesn't solve the problem, because you can only have one copy. The question is, how do you make multiple copies with an absolute guarantee of accuracy? It was also going to stereotype the results, produce an impression so you could make a printing plate automatically. So that's how you eliminate transcription errors. So we've got calculation errors, transcription errors, typesetting errors, automatic typesetting built into the machine, and verification. Because of the method of differences, each result depends on the prior result. Each result depends on the prior result. So if the last result is correct, then you know that all the other results have to be correct. And so you only have to verify one value instead of having to verify every value. And if you try to verify every value, you have a risk of making the same mistakes, or making new mistakes in the verification. So that's how the machine would eliminate all errors at a stroke. As far as the thinking machine, Ada Lovelace, Lady Byron, saw the machine in 1833. Lovelace met Babbage when she was 17 in 1833, and they saw the engine. Lady Byron writes in a diary, "Last week we saw the thinking machine, for such it seems." So this idea of the transference from thing to thought, from matter to mind, is actually, they were aware immediately of the significance of that. So we can see that this machine involves, Babbage's conception involves the extension of the industrial metaphor of production from physical things to mental things. And this is evident in the language that they use. they spoke about a real manufactory of numbers. They saw the machine as a factory for numbers. So this, again, you have the industrial model of industrial production. Carlyle, Thomas Carlyle wrote, it was the age of machinery in every outward and inward sense of the word, in every outward and inward sense of the world. So it wasn't just the transformation of nature by technology. It was also, that's the outward sense of the age of machinery. It was also an inward sense, and that is that mechanism became the terms in which people understood things. So you didn't actually understand anything until you had a mechanical model for it. And so the age of machinery was actually a much richer metaphor than just physical things. It was to do with the terms in which they saw the world. This particular... I'm thinking that an hour and a half is a very long time, so we can be quite leisurely. But I realize that actually, at this rate, at this pace, slow pace, we're going to run out of time. So,
it's a little boring.
What's that?
It's a little boring.
Thank you. thank you for that encouragement. this machine is also played a part in the history of development of ideas. And this is to do with Babbage's theory of miracles. Now, science at that stage was entering into a competition with religion for control over the account of the way the world was. And if there is a God, then there isn't a problem about cause, because anything unexpected that happens, it's either a miracle or there is a divine agency which we don't understand which can cause it. If science is going to compete with religion for the account of the world, then it has to account in some way for miracles, for unexpected events. And what Babbage did was use this machine in a very effective way to try and reconcile rationalism and determinism with unpredictability and divine influence, because he didn't want to contradict the church, but by the same time he wanted to defend rationalism. So his theory of miracles is, so what was the problem? The problem was discontinuities in nature.